Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. Welcome back to another episode. This is part two of our look at the church and state. And if you haven't tuned into the first part, I do want to encourage you to go back and revisit what I was said in the first. Now, you might think I'm a little conspiracy theory or maybe cynical or down on our governments or the church or any of those kinds of things. And I'm going to explain some of that here today. It's not that I'm down or negative. Yes, there are problems that we all can see that we all need to change. But what I'm here to do is to awaken people. You see, I believe these big power systems have an anesthetizing effect on our lives. They numb us to the realities that are just outside our door. They keep us from experiencing life by giving us a surrogate existence. And I think that's an unfair trade. And a lot of people have seen this and know the difference and are tapping into it. And we see it all over the world. And I want you to see it and to join it too. So last week I gave an example of something that we could do that could create a cataclysmic shift in our political system so long as enough people did it. You see, if enough people simply changed their voter registration, our binary, our dualistic, our two-party otherness-based system would lose power. It would have to shift its story and focus toward the center rather than the poles in order to maintain its feeder base. And as a result of its desire to survive, we would see more centered politicians and governments and decisions, those that actually represent the people, not extreme people who say they represent the people, you see. But you and I know that's not likely to happen. And like I said last week, the church and state exist for themselves primarily. And as soon as a shift towards something like that started to happen, you know as well as I do that the storytellers would be enacted to place doubt and fear and threat in order to maintain their base. They'd say, that's stupid, that's silly. Don't do that. We have a two-party system. It won't work. It'll skew it. It's just like when you're sick and tired of the options and you choose a independent candidate. The polarities both say that's a wasted vote because that candidate has no chance of winning. So you're wasting your vote, right? That's the same kind of message that tells you you can't go that way. Don't go against the system. It's here. You need to stay a part of it. Pick a team and feed us. It doesn't matter which team you're on, obviously. I think most people are figuring this out that in politics, it doesn't matter if you have a Republican or a Democrat. You're probably going to get a talking head who's just there because corporations have put them there with their dollars. They're really serving their own interests. We see this in our politicians all the time. But, you know, our country's divided, and strangely, it's united within either church or state. Make no mistake about it, church and state are the same machine. They work together to validate our binary facade. Do you understand how that works? A binary facade, an otherness-based dual system? See, within either camp, a people find a sense of unity, at least on the surface. And this makes us feel better about life. But it's not real unity. All you did is join a team. You didn't really find unity. You found people who also joined the same team. And therefore, you have an affinity towards them. You allow yourself to be more merciful towards them, more graceful, more understanding, more patient towards them. Until the day that you don't. Until you create another division between you and them within your team. right? This is just how it is. It's the disease of otherness. Our political problems are otherness problems. So there is no unity without diversity. You can't have unity by weeding out the diversity. And that tends to be what our separations are all about. That's what church and state are all about. Pick a team, create an other, a straw man, an argument against, and you can create strength and people will support your cause and listen and tune in. And as they get angry and furious, they'll send in more dollars. They'll pay attention to your programs. They'll listen to your talking heads. They'll feed the machine. You see how that works? Would you consider street gangs to share unity? I mean, certainly if you're on one side, there's a brotherhood, right? There's a unity. And a lot of people say that they join street gangs because there's a family there where they didn't have a family before. But no one is more like and more similar to a blood than a Crip. Oh, yeah, they have some differences, but both of them come from the same neighborhoods, maybe a different street block here or there. They have similar socioeconomic background, certain mindsets. I mean, no one is more similar to a blood than a Crip. Yet despite this, they cannot find unity despite having very little diversity. Unity is the dissolution of otherness, not the dissolution of diversity. As I showed you last week, church and state feed on otherness. They survive on otherness. And I gave you an example of the state, and I spent most of the time there, but this week I'm going to look a little closer at the church. And perhaps the most visible display of the shift is occurring within the church. See, within most urban areas, less than 30% of the population attends a religious service more than once a month. And that's all religions, more than once a month. That includes weddings and funerals. 30% of the population will darken the door of a religious institution. Now, that figure is in decline by about 1% to 2% per year. And the church attributes this to the secularization of the world. And they're ramping up their game of evangelism and being on mission and to save the world. But that's not really the case. The people aren't leaving the church because of a deficiency and because of their secularization. They're leaving the church for other reasons. Only a minority of them actually ever turn towards atheism. In fact, the fastest growing faith category is not Christian, not Jewish, not Muslim, it's not Hindu, it's not Buddhist. It's spiritual but not religious. You see, people of all religions, the Muslim faith, the Hindu faith, the Buddhists, the Jews, Christians, they are all leaving their mainline Orthodox traditions without abandoning their faith. And they are pursuing a spirituality apart from the religious structure. And this is a category I'm very interested in. And it's where unity and diversity actually exist in peace. Now, this is a message that's found in all mature religions. And it was the hallmark of Jesus' teaching too. I mean, he didn't require anyone to leave their religion and come to follow him. All he asked them to do was to relearn their religion in a new way. He didn't make the centurion stop becoming a Roman. He didn't make the Samaritan cease to become a Samaritan. He didn't ask Jews to stop being Jews, and none of the disciples and first apostles stopped being Jewish. You see, all it is a place for them to come and relearn their faith in a new way. And that is the trend, the exodus from churches and mainline denominations and religious structures is into spirituality without the superstructured. And Jesus modeled a faith that is internally experienced and not externally imposed. And that's what people are seeking. We don't want all the rules and all the traditions and things like that. They're kind of weird and they're archaic and they don't relate. But we want to connect to God in a personal way. And our God experience is unique and varied across all these traditions and across the borders. You see, it unifies all comers by eliminating otherness. But in order to possess this freedom, it ends up costing us something that we all have. We must trade in our life that was provided by the system in order to receive our true life. And that does not happen easily. We saw last week, it's almost impossible to even change a voter registration card. How in the world are people going to come to the place where they're going to learn to make that kind of trade on a deeper, more personal level? Usually it doesn't happen without severe pain and suffering. But let's not forget that the church and the state are the powers that put Jesus on the cross. That's a vital point. In order for us to be united in our very diverse and highly divided world, we have to leave our establishments of otherness and enter an exile. What's the exile? Well, you know, my blog, Thrive in Exile, it's what I'm all about. It's what this podcast is all about. It's a desert place of spiritual, emotional, financial, or relational aridity. The exile is the moment we realize that to truly live, we must leave our formative container. We're like a little root-bound pot that has to get repotted. And once we grow our roots deep into the new soil of a bigger container, we will never fit back into that little pot again. We know that. So it's a one-way trip. Now, Jesus said that if we followed him, we would hate our own families. That's found in Luke 14, 26. But we must be repotted if we want to find our true self and not risk losing it. That's it. Was said in Luke 9:24, as our roots can easily suffocate us if they're not given space to grow. You see, the ideologies, the traditions, the expectations that were given to us by church and state no longer satisfy the questions anymore. We've outgrown them. We all go into exile alone, but we each follow a voice that inspires us onward despite the pressures of the herd to return. It's a well-worn path that we walk single file, and it is a very spiritual path. On the other side of the exile awaits our family reunion. This is always a spiritual process that plays out in everyday experiences. It's how we all grow up and expand our awareness and our consciousness. Now, I know that I come across critical of the church and the state, and some might say I'm even harsh. All of our structures are delivery systems and not destinations. These are structures that must go through deconstruction before they can be reconstructed. Richard Rohr says that we all belong in three categories. And one of them is form, the next one is deformation, and then there's reform. You see, we all love the structures. Those are all the form. And then we get tired of them. We outgrow them. We deconstruct them. And then we realize we need some kind of order and we reform them, hopefully better than the before. The meta narrative of all the Bible says that we came from a garden, we entered a desert, and then we end in a city. It's the same three categories. So whether personal, societal, or global, we are all in one of these stages of process. And this goes back to what I said last week, that it's not a smart thing or a stupid thing. It's not a religious thing or a non-religious thing. It's not a Republican or Democrat thing. It's a proximity thing. How close are you to this exile? It's when will you know? See, there is no skipping the deconstruction phase. That's all. At some point, it deconstructs. So if I come across like a deconstructionist, which I am, then you must know that it's for the purpose of reform. You see, I don't stop with deconstruction. I try so hard to give us tools to rebuild it into something way, way better. And so it's worth going through the pain of the deconstruction process if we're going to end up in something good. You know, likewise, our transformed self will emerge in like manner once we enter the exile of our own cross-bearing. I tear down so that people can be free and find their way to the other side. It is the process of reform. See, the Passion story depicts the destruction of the externalized temple. Its new location is within all of us. There is no longer a separation between God and humanity. Remember the story? The temple veil was torn in two. That's the veil that separated the Holy of Holies from all the people. God and people are no longer separated. This is in Mark 15:38 or Ephesians 2:14. See, the picture in heaven is one where no temple exists, if you're looking in Revelations. And that's a bummer for the church, that there's no temple. Because the church and its system really wants to make sure that that temple is there and strong. But it doesn't exist in heaven, and we don't need it because it's all within all of us now. And that's a bummer for the church. The government is one of inspired self-government depicted in Scripture. Meaning in heaven, there isn't some big, huge, external, weighty, threatening government. It's inspired. It's spirit-filled self-government. And that is a bummer for the state. So no temple, no government. Bummer for church and state. That's the story. That's the city. That's the community. That's the place where unity and diversity both coexist. It's the ultimate perfect city. It's the destination. It's a metaphor. It's the new story. It's the gospel. It's all religions compiled together into this amazing, amazing awareness. Deconstructing in order to build the city is what this newsletter, this podcast, that's what it's all about. You see, we never know freedom in the garden. It only points us in the right direction. Our institutions inoculate us and anesthetize us and give us just enough of a life so that we keep the big machine running. I know it's scary to question them. I know that the desert exile is arid, it's arduous, and it's uncertain. Yet that is where we learn to know and trust the voice that remains within us, and it removes us from our formative containers. It deconstructs the surface self, and ultimately completes us via a rule that is totally worth the struggle. That's freedom. And that's salvation, if you can accept the term. Church and state can only mold us to serve their own mold. Like a mold, they press us into a particular shape. And that works great until we know and trust our own unique shape. Then the form stops serving us and starts pinching us. We all go through life trying to discover our shape, and we try on different molds of church and state. But fidelity to our true architecture comes at great cost to the old forms of external self. It is the death required for life. Only the exile can mold us into the united people that we all aspire to be. It's the path of all of life and faith. I hope you'll see that this newsletter and this podcast is a tool for those in exile who long for reform. It's my hope and deepest prayer that these words reflect a voice that is found deep within you. Deep calls to deep, as the psalmist says in Psalm 42:7. I wish only to be a beacon that sends out our collective message. It's a weekly reminder to all sojourners that we are not finished yet. I yearn to empower that deep part within all of us that still dreams, it still hopes, and it still has enough in the tank to take one more step. Our lives and our energy is precious. Let's not waste it on anything but rebuilding each other and rebuilding this city. Learning to live out of love is the only path where that can happen. Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.